true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
All right, so we're going to dive in and get this lady on here. I guess I could start by saying, hi, Cassidy Jamal Brown.
Hey, Katie. Wait, I know it because it's so good. Lauren Hardy Rubin.
Nicely done. You know, my buddy Vanda, or this woman Vanda, who I know from L.A., who when I lived in L.A., we started running into each other at a bunch of different comedy sort of circle type situations. We became buddies. We were in some writing groups together, I think. I had a birthday party she came to. She was an LA buddy of mine years ago. And I thought of her for the podcast because of her life history. Because what I remember, and I'm telling you all this because I'm gearing up to read to you kind of like what she texted me about what's happened since she and I were buddies.
Ah.
So at the time that we were hanging out in LA, what I remember about Vanda is she was a devout yoga practitioner every day. I remember one time she said to me, like, I build my life around yoga, not yoga around my life. And I was like, go you. You're committed to that.
Wow.
And then one time we wrote together a bunch. We were both writing comedy stuff at the time. And then she told me a story about having been to some kind of like meditation school, healing place, commune off the grid. I don't know. I want to ask her about it. I don't remember what it was, but where they learned to levitate and like move objects with their mind and stuff. And I was like fascinated. And I think I mentioned last week to you guys that her attitude that I always sort of appreciated was like, yeah, it was cool to like levitate shit, but like, what does that have to do with anything? Like what?
Right.
If you're not going to become like the lady who levitates stuff and like monetize it or like help people with it, like what
or
are
actually
you?
Actually fly and be a superhero.
Yeah. Yeah. Then like, what's it for? Anyway, that's how I remember it. But I'll be very curious to hear like her actual, you know, what really happened there and what was her perspective. And then she wrote me this briefly. She said, since I was at your birthday party in the Valley when I was a, quote, spiritual comic in L.A. and worked with you, I've got she's done some Buddhist stuff, left a significant boyfriend, done work as a lab rat. I don't know what that means. Traveled through Eastern Europe, drank buttloads of ayahuasca in ceremonies with the Santo Daime Church legally, and sold my house. I'm writing 5 days a week now and getting a memoir out. And then she's got some stuff about her brother she might ask about in the records. Crazy life story of her brother, like kind of like your dad's story level of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe some sketchy shit went down and she might
maybe we're
going to
solve a crime.
Maybe. Yes.
And God, then, I hope so.
I know, me too. She was a little like, I'm not sure if I could like tell people about it if we like talk about that. And I'm like, all right, well, you decide. So we'll see. And then she says, I would ask how my first 19 years of my turbulent life, runaway, two deaths, stripping, violence, crime, are a contribution to others. I guess if my brother or dad had any info for me, they might have dropped that into an ayahuasca ceremony, but let's just see how it goes. And I was like, hey, you can ask about whatever you want. We will talk about what you want to talk about or not. Even that, the fact that I like read that right now, I'll check with her after and be like, right, is it okay that I read that? And we'll kind of go from there. And she's actually texting me right now. We probably should hop her on. Did you have anything?
No, that sounds great. I think we just jump right into it. It just sounds fascinating.
All right, cool.
Yeah, I have no updates or check-ins or anything, you know, that we need to cover before we get to some crazy, wonderful stories from a wild-lifed person.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I know we want to chit chat first, but we're trying to like stay on a time budget lately.
That's great. I love it.
For our audience, we have like a generous sound engineer producer person who's like, we need to tighten the time up, bitches. And we're like, you're right. And so we're trying to be like, time is a thing. two, one, and Vanda, ladies and gentlemen, except not.
Oh, just kidding.
Hi, Vanda.
Hi.
Hi, it's Vanda Mikulaski. I forgot how to say your last name, Van. Oh my gosh, welcome. I'm so happy to have you. It's been so long. Good to see you.
Hi, I know, huh? Hi, Cassidy. Hi, Desmond.
Hey.
Well, Vanda, we'll kind of, I'll just kind of fill you in a little bit here and we can kind of dive on in. I was just telling Cass and Desmond and whoever listens to this, that, you know, how we kind of met, that you and I were in some writing groups together, that we both were kind of calling ourselves like spiritual comedians in LA at the time. And I was telling Cassidy last week on the podcast about something that I remember from our friendship time that you said to me that always stayed with me, that is kind of how I've thought, you know, how you think of a person from like, she said that thing that time, and then that becomes sort of the encapsulated thing you have in your mind about that. Anyway, the thing in our case was, I remember you told me, because I was like deep into Sufism and you were into whatever stuff you were into, and we would bond about that, right? And you told me a story about, maybe it was a school or a commune or a group of people, some kind of something that you were a part of at some point, where you guys learned like levitation and how to like move objects with your mind, or somebody in the group was levitating and moving objects in your mind with their mind. And I remember that we talked about it and your perspective was like, you know, I realized, and this was the part that I kind of love, I realized like, sure, great, I could like move a coffee cup across the table, but like, what is that doing for the world, or who cares? Or like, woohoo, look what I can do. But it doesn't really, I remember you were kind of looking for like, I don't know. So
yeah, parlor tricks of the God man realized, like they have, what are they called? Fakirs in India that just kind of do that shit for tourists, you know?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Like, look at what I can juggle plates with my thoughts. Like, who cares? What are you doing?
Yeah, that's real. That was really an issue for me at one point. That's why I left the cult, if you will. I say cult in quotes, because what isn't a cult, you know?
I do know. A cult? I really know, but I hear that so deeply. So many, everything. Okay, every system I've ever entered, I've entered going like this, like, I don't like systems.
For our listeners, Katie's giving a side eye to the camera.
Exactly.
A suspicious side eye.
I like that.
Yeah. Side and eye. Then I get in and I get what I need from the system. And then I find out 20 minutes later, oh yeah, this is also a cult. I'm out. And then I'm out, you know?
Yeah. And every brilliant vision that some group has to be something or do something always comes up against the issue of propagating itself. How do you do that? You know, I mean, that's where Landmark got in trouble. That's where AA doesn't get in trouble, although I'll get them in trouble for other things.
Yeah.
That's certainly where my Ramtha, the allegedly channeled entity, gets itself in trouble. And I don't know.
I know, dude. Well, it's like when people have to start making money, you're like, okay, well, we got to keep the camp alive, and we need fire here, and we need food for the people that come. So we have to make some money. So we have to tell people how amazing we are and be impressive and sell the thing now. And so how do we market?
Yeah, survival, you know?
Yeah.
And then you start to shortcut your ethics in some way or you compromise. I've watched it from the outside 100 times.
I imagine there's a way where that wouldn't happen or doesn't happen with some groups or whatever, but you know, intention is everything. And like, I was just telling my writing group this morning, if you walk into a store and there's two separate sales guys and one has the intention to sell you something and the other just wants to help you and they have the same script, you'll have two different experiences completely depending on where their heart is. You know? Yeah.
100%.
And it's the same with groups. Like, you know, they might say they're all about creating God man realized, God woman realized on this planet, and you're all going to be Christ in a number of years, but
but it's going to cost you.
Yeah, but we got to develop some merch and get it out there.
But I don't have a problem with spiritual communities or spiritual endeavors charging things. I think that's like just pay it or don't. It doesn't matter, you know.
Well, I mean, look, I'm a person who charges for spiritual things. I mean, I have to earn a living, and this is a service I actually desire to provide. And so I provide it and people pay money. I think there's a, again, it's like what you're saying, Vanda. It's like I have to check myself. I'm not perfected. You know, I have to constantly be like, okay, hold on. This one client who's bugging me right now, I want to charge them more because I hate them. Am I going to do that? Or like, you know, like, or like this person, I want
you
like
get an asshole fee.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and like, the way I try to check myself is I'm constantly running every question through what I call my connection to the divine, because I'm like, my ego will come up with all kinds of shit. Like, I don't know how we're going to do blah, blah, blah. And then I just get put back in check and humbled over and over again, just by having a real spiritual practice, because the spirit isn't about, I mean, the spirit wants me abundant and happy, and it has me making money and flourishing and doing well, but it knows where the lines are with my little ego better than my ego often does. So I like to stay in relationship with that, so that I'm like, hopefully not being a dick.
Right. Well, I have my dick meter on myself quite often, and it's a never ending humbling, right? To be
totally
in relation with other human beings and to go, my bad again and again, you know. It's a great work, I think, you know. It's the weirdest thing that it's, you know, when I was doing that work, learning to read, playing cards and all that stuff, doing mind over matter stuff, it was like, so what if everyone's kind of mean spirited, you know, and the staff there was really mean spirited.
I know. I dated a guy who, years and years ago, we won't name names, but I dated a person who had all these, like, he had like, I mean, he would tell you he had beings, entities on other planets that served him, his bidding, and where he was a king, and a king, and he would astral travel at night. The thing was, it was all true. Like, I have a capacity where I could look energetically at what people are doing, and I saw, like, he does go to a planet where these beings worship him, and he does, but he was so icky that I was like, I'm not impressed if you enslaved a race of people to serve you. Good, ew. Still, it's ew. I don't want, I mean, ew. But interesting on the level of like what's possible in the realm of consciousness.
Like anything, right? I mean, you think about like what the, I drank a lot of ayahuasca for a while there and did a bunch of ceremonies and basically tripping to find God, you know? And you'd see these guys show up, and some of them were like, they got value from the ayahuasca journey. And so they did it again and again. And then at some point, this one guy kept being so wildly, like almost schizophrenically inappropriate, where he'd interrupt meetings and things like that. I was like, oh, I was looking up to him like he was the great ayahuasca leader, you know, and everyone can go nuts. And I don't know, I have this sense of the divine where it just loves mischief. It loves mischief. It loves Hitler. It loves Jesus Christ. It loves all of shit happening. You know what I mean? And I don't have my philosophical leanings, I don't know. I'm more with Socrates on the I don't know thing, but I do lean into a little bit of like a non-dualistic perspective of I don't know if there's any such thing as right or wrong in the big picture. I know that's hard for people to hear. You're saying murder is right. And I'm like, no, but you know, I've done a lot of looking into my own murdering that I've done in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking on a level playing field, Hitler is actually kinder, because I left people walking wounded. You know, Hitler killed him. I left a lot of walking wounded in my wake. There's a lot of W's. So,
well, okay. I fully hear you and am with you. In fact, I spend the first 2 days of almost every class I teach, and I always talk about that, whether it's improv or stand up or spirituality or healing or whatever the fuck it is, talking about judgment and how judgment, right, wrong, good, bad, right, wrong, good, bad, is the whole structure that holds the fabric of the projected consciousness we're all living in, the matrix of, you know, culture together. And that when one can function beyond judgment, and I go through the whole thing where I'm like, that doesn't mean go shoot heroin, and it doesn't mean go fuck your neighbor, it doesn't mean kill people. It means look at what choices do you have when you're functioning from right, wrong, good, bad, versus when you're not. And what can what becomes available when we're choosing from the realm of non-dualistic, non-judgment. Now, I find it also interesting that within that, I do personally have a thing. I have my own personal boundaries within that. Like for me, Katie Rubin, within that, I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be a dick to people. I want to be a strong, clear leader, aligned soul in service, la, la, la. And it does matter to me that people not be Hitler and not be dicks in my life and in my little bubble of whatever, because I don't need that in my space. But, and I'm not in judgment of it over there, like over there, go ahead, do whatever you want across the street or in my bathroom. But I don't, I'm not about it in my space. How is that land for you?
I don't know, there's a bunch of different viewpoints about that, that I, all of which I like, but one of them's like a Werner Earhart. I don't know if you guys, because you're Bay Area based, right? So you, I'm sorry, this is, it was pretty, but it's too fucking hot. This idea that to be of service to someone spiritually, you have to, you're only as valuable as how much you can tolerate their garbage. And
nope, not for me.
No, you asked me what.
No, I know. I'm just agreeing.
Yeah. So, but to become spacious enough to not interact with their garbage and keep going back and treating them as if they're God or whatever, divine, and interacting with their greatness. It's sort of like training a puppy. You never hit them. You just keep saying good girl to the things they do well. But, you know, I don't honestly have the tolerance for that yet. I'm not that enlightened. I know people who are, who actually don't react. I have an ex-boyfriend who I've never seen him react. I really haven't. Yeah, once he said, because someone owed him a whole bunch of money. And he said, well, I know this when the name comes up, I think about that money. But that was it. It wasn't like, fuck that guy. You know, so, you know, that's one way to look at it is you become spacious. Mm-hmm. You include their humanity. And I'm not there yet. I don't know. I'm just not there yet. That's one idea. There's other ideas about how to sit with what's irritating one about another. Because honestly, I believe that one day I was trying to help my sister. Sorry, I'm discursive. One day I was trying to help my sister with something on the phone, and she told me I was judging her. And I said, am I? I thought I was trying to help. And I called my coach at the time, Anurag, and I said, honey, how do you know if you're judging someone? And he said, well, pretty simple. Either you're 100% at peace with them or you're judging them. And I'm like, so, all right. And yeah, there's certain things I'm clean and sober. I just walked away from a relationship because of that issue. But at the same time, I can love him. You know, I mean, anything that's not love, I guess that's the gauge for how well I'm doing, you know, with people. It's hard to see with Republicans sometimes.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I'm sorry, my brother became Republican. It's not that he's Republican, really. It's that he's arrogantly, stridently self-righteous about his point of view.
Yeah, that's
just it. Like, dude, I can't hear you. Stop sending me Candace Owens links. Do you know who she is?
Alt-right. Yep.
I'm like, he sent me five links per our conversation. And I'm like, why don't I send him a bunch of ESPN shit that he's not interested in? You know, it's like with the links. I'm not political, you know?
You know, on that, what you were just talking about, if I'm leading a healing group, right, there's a way that I feel like I'm there for a particular purpose to facilitate some kind of transformation. And I struggled a lot with like, oh, I should transcend all of my reactivity and to a certain degree, and I'm always looking at my part in things and looking at, okay, I see, I'm triggered, this is mine, this is that. One thing that helps me with it lately is I'll name things. I'll just be transparent and be like, well, your defenses rub up against my defenses right now. So we probably should take a break and go drink some tea And then we probably, and see if we can become a little more spacious for one another. But then I use it as a teaching tool for like, hey, let's look at what that moment was. That moment was, here's my shit, here's her shit. And we were, our shits were bumping up against each other. So it's always like a teaching opportunity if I use it that way. Yeah, because I'm not anywhere near perfectly not reactive. My therapist said to me recently, like, see, this is what I love about the records, and this will kind of transition us into kind of doing that whole thing. But what I love about just, I don't know, the realm of God or the realm of oneness or the space of consciousness where there is no judgment is that it's a space of consciousness where there is no judgment, meaning I am gonna, I'm all human over here. Whole, so human, sassy, edgy, irreverent, angry, tired. So when I go to the realm of oneness, I get the benefits of being there selfishly. Like I just benefit from being there. And when I'm working with clients from that space is working them. I'm just a vessel, truly. And so my whole job, as I see it, is get out of the way enough to say whatever they would have me say or what they say directly. And sometimes they're like, you tell your story now about the time when blah, blah, blah. And other times they're like, shush, 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 Katie, we talk now. And you'll hear my voice change a little and I'll sound different. And it's because I'm fucking channeling the light. So the point is like, it comes from a place in me of like, if I'm just leading a thing, I'm going to be triggered a lot. And I want to be there. I like leading, but I need to be being led during it. And that's what the light is doing for me. Yeah. And even in that space, I need to take breaks because I can't hold it forever. Like one woman that I worked with recently, she could hold that light, the channel light. It's fucking intense. And she could hold it for hours and hours. And I was like watching it and going, wow, she's still boom right there. And I got to take breaks. I can't hold it that long. You know, I can hold it a while, but not that long. Cassidy Brown has his hand raised.
Yes, I'm just gonna raise my hand. Hi, Cassidy. Hey, this is so fascinating. And I have a question I keep hanging up on around the concept of like judgment, non-dualism, and that, you know, all things are in a sense equal or are have space and are okay. Here's my but on that I want to question. And that is that is not the intention of even entering into a space of like getting closer to source and spiritual light, is it not usually motivated or in some way desired to, I think of it as alleviate suffering in oneself or in others or in general, in some way address suffering, and as a result, but to me, suffering, there's a judgment attached to that word. In the sense of it is bad to feel broken or feel unwhole, or it sucks to feel shitty or tortured or literally physically in danger or whatever. And that, so is there not some aspect of, we talk about the light as being love, or we talk about it being, and that's in a sense, a dualistic idea. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
And so I struggle with the, like, it is all equal, except that why do we, the way we're, what we're asking ourselves to do is to get better at something.
Yeah.
And that's a judgmental phrasing.
I have thoughts and feelings. I'd love to hear yours first, Vanda.
Someone used the term toxic positivity.
Yes.
Some podcast I was listening to.
Yes.
And, oh my God, that's such a good term. I wish I had written that. That's so great. But yeah, there's that. You know, it's hard not to judge when you're an animal trying to survive on a planet. You know, I mean, it's hard. It's like we're wired for it or something, you know,
for sure.
And we're wired to do it and not know we're doing it and stuff like that. So I don't know. I know that suffering is like, my memoir is like the darkest, crappiest 19 years of my life. And yet it taught me a lot. It hardened me a lot and it softened me a lot. On the other hand, like, I know I have great compassion for people suffering. And it also made me a little bit of a tough girl, you know, which I have to keep trying to train myself to not be. And So I don't know. Am I answering the question?
Well, right? What are your thoughts, Vanda, about, I think what I'm hearing Cassidy ask, you tell me, Cass, if I'm off here, is like, how do you, if we're in non-dual, the non-dual framing of reality, where there is no judgment of anything, and we're saying Hitler is kind of fine in the eyes of God because, or in the eyes of whatever consciousness, because it's occurring, or for whatever reason, there's no judgment on things. I think what you're asking, Cass, help me, is how do we then frame, like, what would be the point of healing? Because people coming for healing are coming to suffer less, and inside of suffering. And so if we were, is that the question?
Yeah. Like what, then why heal?
So why?
Yeah, what am I healing from? If there's something if everything is equal, then what am I healing from?
Okay. I have thoughts. Right. I'm ready.
Right. I get that. I mean, it's not that I don't have my druthers. I'd love to see a world of peace and love and kindness and all that. And there are many flowers in the garden. I was just thinking about the twisted guy I just left. And he wasn't twisted just twisted enough to drink every single friggin' day. You know, that's to me, like, that's not like, I don't know. There's something in that to me that is like, you're anesthetizing. There's some shit you just don't want to look at.
Right.
You know, and if you talk to him more than 5 minutes, you'll find out he hates his father. And I'm like, this isn't my world. I have to leave. And so I just sent him some love in my meditation this morning. Cause he's like a twisted flower in my garden, you know, and I'm a twisted flower too, just twisted in a different way, you know, and I'm willing to not anesthetize myself long enough to deal with some of my issues. You know, but
and even there's judgment. And this is me I'm not throwing this back on you, but I'm noticing, like, of course there's judgment on the three-dimensional realm. We are humans. And so we, the human beings, of course we have, I'd rather not do that. So I'm judging that by saying, yeah, I don't want to do that. I want to do this instead.
Well, but there's also a subtle distinction. Someone taught me at one point about the difference between holding it like a preference. Like Vanda was just saying, well, I have my druthers. That's her preference. I'd like a world of peace and love. And holding it like it has to be that way because it's right or wrong.
Mm.
And you can feel the energetic, I can feel the energetic difference between this is right and wrong. So you're bad and I'm good, or I'm good or I'm bad and you're good. Ugh, that does like this separation thing inside my belly. But if I say, you know, I'd prefer no more war, and war is occurring, that for me has a peaceful energy in my belly, where I'm holding both. I'm going, both are. I desire no war, and war is occurring. That's love being present with war, and love being present with my desire. So
yeah,
you'll notice that, like, Gandhi, or it's a bad example, but like super peaceful people, when they're quote unquote fighting for justice, or like out on the front lines trying to do stuff that to change the world, they have this like, hey guys, I keep coming back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Like, if you look at how she communicates energetically, or just look at the words she says, she's always like, yeah, I love my Republican brother across the aisle. Here's how I disagree and why. And see how it never changes into a reactive fuck you. It always has a kind of like, I disagree and here's why. There's love for all of it, which to me speaks to the non-dual question, Cass, which is to say that, here's how I'd frame it. I don't know. And there's always more to learn. If we're sitting in the realm of non-dualism, meaning, if I'm not, let's take Hitler. If I'm holding Hitler in love, or if I'm holding Hitler in non-judgment, I'm allowing Hitler to exist in my body right now. Okay, Hitler existed, killed all the people. Okay, I'm not separating internally away from it by making it wrong. I'm just holding it as a thing that occurred. I can be spacious and loving around that, not judging it, and also simultaneously say, would you please stop killing the Jews? I'm doing that right now. In other words, we're talking about a state of being of individual humans. We're not talking about See, the mind wants to understand, how can non-dualism exist in the realm of dualism? Like, they're different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the being can understand it. The being of my body goes like, well, because they're coexisting. In other words, I'm holding Hitler right now, right this second. I'm not pretending. I'm actually like imagining Hitler and he's murdering the people. And I'm not reacting and I'm not separating from him. Uh-huh. So he's held in love. And I would still prefer it if he would not kill those people, because there's no reason actually for them to die. But it's about the energy I'm being as I do it. Now, am I claiming that I'm perfect and could do that in reality on the front lines with Hitler? No. Probably not. I get right. mad. I get mad, mad, mad. But I'm saying, if you're asking the question, what do we do with dualism and non-dualism when suffering is real? That's the answer I understand. It's about how you're holding it.
Yeah.
But action is then another question. Like, do if you just sit there and hold it peacefully, both sides, then your preference cannot be enacted.
Well, no, then you have to take action while holding it that way.
Right.
That's the ideal.
Right. You're still shooting towards a preference.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I'm not arguing with you at all. I'm actually sort of working that
but
out.
But there's
in my head.
A
I'm
difference
saying,
between shooting for a preference and
it's
judging.
It's just such a soft word.
That's the
preference
point.
Preference is such a soft word.
That's the point.
Like,
softness.
You're literally going to stop the slaughter. Stop genocide with a preference. That's I'm just struggling with that because of a preference. That just feels very, that's hard.
But here's why it's hard, Cass, is because we think that the only way to stop a hard thing is with another hard thing.
Mm.
And that is patriarchal.
Right.
It just makes the other side dig into a stronger position, usually. Yeah. And it's like, I'm upset because someone's drinking too much. Now they don't come to me when they want to stop drinking, if they ever do. They won't come to me.
Yeah, they'll go to another person who's soft about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So softness is actually the thing. It's how it's held as you take action changes the impact of the action. And it's very difficult to do for the human animal, which is why when these leaders show up on the planet that we can all get behind, like, or that a lot of people get behind, it's like such a miraculous big deal in a way, because if Ruth Bader Ginsburg can hold it that way, everybody respects her because nobody feels fucking triggered by her. Now, does that mean it's all of our jobs to be that way? I don't know about that. I don't know. It does seem to be the case that if human consciousness or humanity, the human beings that exist, are going to survive longer than another century or two or three, consciousness is going to have to evolve within us to where we're not doing this hard against hard thing. I don't know that that'll happen in this fucking lifetime.
Right. Because the only way to get, we can't necessarily, if we could all level up simultaneously, then cops would stop killing black people wildly because we would all have leveled up simultaneously, which would be amazing and beautiful and wonderful. In the meantime, to slow that action, we throw our bodies on the barricades, which is a hard action. Hmm. So it's like, yeah.
I get it. It's possible to me that death doesn't exist, right? So if death doesn't exist really, then in the world of eternal spirit, energy, whatever, then I don't think we signed up for an easy ride here. I don't think anyone jumped in and said, I want to go down, get in a body.
Yeah.
And just, you know, eat and fuck.
I mean, that's what I thought I signed up for. I was wrong.
I want to eat and have pleasure and comfort. Pleasure and comfort in eating. I don't know. I don't think any of us signed up for that, but maybe. I don't know. Maybe there are a few. And then there are a few who go for super bumpy rides like Ghislaine Maxwell right now, who is like ease and luxury and buying stuff and having sex with babies. And, you know, like, and then now, you know, I'm talking about Jeffrey Epstein's, what are the.
Oh, Katie knows.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you knew.
So you're talking about his lady partner.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Who was sort of like pimping for him a little bit,
right.
Trying to get the young girls and tell them they have modeling careers.
Right. But wait, so she herself is having sex with babies?
Well, she joined in a lot of times with the what she called the nubiles. Got to get him the nubiles, but it was a lot about kissing her man's butt and doing things that, you know, he wanted that were a little on the legal side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in some cultures, it's perfectly fine to screw a 12-year-old, but not in ours. So,
yep. You know. Well, you know, all of this is bringing me back to two. There's this thing of like, it's so interesting. I'm just see if I can articulate this. The answers to a lot of these questions that get posed are these theoretical, but what about this? And how does this idea bump up against that? It's answered in my body, in my, through what I call connection to spirit, meaning in my body, I'm like, there's no conflict there.
Right.
But in the mind, there's a conflict. So Cass, if you go, but why would you pursue healing if suffering is good or if suffering is not bad? Well, the answer in my body is like, because I want to feel better. So I pursued healing to feel better. And then I felt a lot better. Now, that didn't end suffering in the world, but it took my level of suffering from a 10 to about a 1.5. And to me, that's like worth the effort. So that's why personally I would do that, even though, because it feels preferable, like a lot preferable. Now, as Vanda was saying, I have also experienced it such, in other words, the suffering I have experienced in this life was the doorway. It was the thing that made me even give a shit to try to heal that now has me living at a 1.5. What, how many people do you know that have that level of low? I mean, knock wood. Thank you, God. Please don't. I don't need any lessons. But I'm saying, what a gift that I get to live with so little suffering now. All of that came because of suffering.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's why suffering. Why suffering? Because then you can soften the edges of suffering and have less of it. Now, certain people argue like, the human race is evolving to a place where we're all, we could potentially, in the realm of possibility, choose healing or love or joy or from choice rather than from suffering or in reaction to suffering.
Right.
But I am not in a, I don't know humans yet, a lot of them, who actually can do that. Most people choose joy from reaction to suffering or because they don't want any more suffering. But just choosing joy for joy for joy, I'm trying over here.
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, that is not what humans do.
Yeah, that's a really great possibility, though, to step into, to live into, you know, to say I'm committed to. Because that would be, that's a, just a, oh, what a breath of fresh air that is, you know, to just be choosing joy every day because, not because you are getting evicted or...
Yeah.
Or in reaction to something.
In reaction to something that, I mean, normally, like I'm 61 years old, so I've been able to like be beaten up enough by the reality of physical, the material world in order to go, maybe I could be ready for that. Maybe I could actually do that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is relevant where I was like at George Bush's ranch with Cindy Sheehan in Crawford, Texas, not Cindy Crawford in Sheen, Texas. And I was like pissed off that we went to Iraq. And then a friend of mine from Landmark took me aside and said, given who you are and what you're committed to, it would look good on you to not, because I felt like a fraud being there with all those anti-war protesters and stuff. I felt like a fraud. And I realized I wasn't even at peace with my own mother. I still am not. Honestly, it's very, very difficult job this lifetime. but he said, given who you are and what you're committed to, it would look good on you to be able to see everything from everyone's point of view. Then you have some real power. And I was like, wow. So these doctors who are trying to make it illegal for women to have babies at home. There was a group in Seattle that were trying to make, I was like, fuck those fucking, fuck. I was pissed off. And he said, well, if you could see things from their point of view, you might have some power.
What can you say more about, how do you have more power by seeing things through other people's point of view?
Well, like if you can really listen, and I sometimes I do this, I actually listen to two or three Candace Owens interviews just because I have an aversion to her, mm-hmm. a natural aversion, you know, and I'm trying to not be averse. I once watched a Michael Moore movie and my coach watched it with me and he said, yeah, but you know what? It was about the healthcare system because you go to Canada and someone's going to complain about how it isn't all that up there, you know? And I'm like, I so much want to go, this is wrong. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I was so furious that we went to Iraq after Vietnam and the whole military industrial media complex is thriving. And we, you know, we can't get healthcare and stuff like that, like other countries. So I was furious and it's just being right about how wrong something is. Mm-hmm. I don't think has ever made a difference.
Yeah. That's, you know, I do know what you mean. And that's what I'm attempting to articulate in this with, in response to Cassidy's question about like how and what, and is the, and cause I've asked that question a lot in my own process. So I really hear the spirit of the question.
You know, it's something to do. And why not?
I mean,
you know,
I understand why not?
You can sit on a bar stool and complain about your old lady for 90 years. And that's freedom and that's choice, you know, and that's self-expression and that's God, as far as I'm concerned. And it's none of my business. It's not how I'd like to spend my life. There's other ways, you know, that to me are much more intriguing. Like, what would it be like if you could disentangle all your conditioning, if you could really see all your conditioning?
Yeah.
And see the 6-year-old that decided she wasn't good enough and deal with her, and see the 7-year-old who said men are dangerous and deal with her, who's, you know what I mean? Like, what if I could soften around all of those things and become someone who constitutes herself as a contribution to other human beings, you know, like, wow, wouldn't that be fun? And I set up a big obstacle course for that, you know, I think at some point.
Yeah. And you said it again, you said the word soften. What if I could soften to her? It's like, I see it as like we're moving toward more and more spaciousness, more and more softness around anything and everything so that we can transform it. But we have this old idea that says the only way to transform it is to knock it in the head with a fucking hammer. And that doesn't actually work as we're seeing now in the world, or as we've always been seeing and some people have been aware of and some people haven't. Anyway.
Yeah.
Would it be safe to say that, like, the, of course, on the realm of source or spirit or oneness, on the, of course, in that realm, there is no judgment. It is, there is non-dualism. And also, of course, the three-dimensional body, which has a mind and cannot not have a mind.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there is a spectrum and a level of this is better than that. Of course, there is that one just helps us lead us to the other realm, that maybe even that dualism or that spectrum is part of what helps get us to that space.
Well, that's non-dualism. What we're saying about suffering creates non-suffering.
Exactly.
It's the or doorway. Any,
yeah. It's you can't annihilate the judgment 100% or you cease to exist, which would be great. But then Katie no longer exists.
I don't know that I agree with that statement, that if you annihilate the judgment, you cease to exist.
Has anyone ever annihilated dualism in a human being? That's my question. And I feel like it's an ideal to be reached for, of course, but do we have any examples of literal 100% non-dualism?
Yeah.
No judgment.
Yeah.
There's been incidents in human history.
Yeah, there's like nine
I think
of them.
Some of them are famous, like Jesus and Buddha. Some of them are non-famous.
Yeah. They're saints. They're called saints or like
perfected
masters or whatever.
I'll bet you could find incidents of some version of the dualism in them. They're just much farther along the way. I'm sorry, I'm a cynic on this, but I believe in the ideal 100%. And I want to make that clear. I absolutely believe in the ideal. And I'm just being like, but it actually doesn't exist in the three-dimensional realm.
Well, that is right. That's the whole point about the three-dimensional realm, is that you can live as a human living kind of beyond the three-dimensional realm. You don't have to stop at three dimensions, but there's a phrase I like they talk about, and then we need to open the records for Vanda.
Yeah.
There's a phrase they talk about, transcend and include. That's how you do healing from a spiritual perspective that allows you to stay human and not become a douchebag.
Right.
Like an annoying spiritual.
What is the term again?
Transcend and include. In other words, if you transcend something by, I don't know, let's say moving from the three-dimensional reality to the fifth or the sixth or whatever, some other more fine, subtle dimensional reality, mm-hmm. and include the thing. In other words, you go like, an example would be like, I'm mad at you, boyfriend, for whatever fucking thing I'm mad at. You put the toilet seat up wrong. I don't know. Then you don't go like bad self for being angry. You go, I'm angry and I'm going to move through it to the other side. And then that's where you can discover in the other side on the, this is how it works for me anyway. On the other side, I discover, oh, the actual truth is revealed. The anger was a doorway to something else. And sometimes the anger is actually a doorway to like, no, this anger is appropriate. I need a boundary here. It's not okay what you're doing. Other times when I take the anger to the light and transcend it, move to another higher frequency of it, it reveals to me a vulnerability. Oh, I feel scared that I'm going to fall in the toilet. Or another time
that he doesn't care about me.
Yes, I might come up against, oh, he doesn't care. And so then I can care for myself or the divine can care for me. And then suddenly I don't care about the toilet. But what I know that people always skip over somehow is there's not one answer. There's when you bring the light to something to in order to transcend it, okay? We don't know what's going to happen until we do that. And when we do it, something is revealed. And sometimes, again, it's that anger is appropriate. Other times it's, oh, I was guarding against feeling scared. Other times it was like, oh, I need to express a need that I didn't even know I had. So it's not simple and it's not formulaic. We have to find out.
I have to tell you a little quick anecdote about that. I was reacting to something when I was working with Elevate Film Festival and I brought my boyfriend Anurag into it and he brought a whole bunch of money to the thing and then he became an exec producer with them. And then I'm like, well, what about getting my project in there? And we were at dinner with them and I'm like, hey, how come you promoted her project and not mine? And I was up in the middle of the night crying in my bathroom quietly. And then I went, wait a minute. I actually would love to wake his ass up with my tears. So I let it rip. And and then he goes, what's the matter, baby? And I go, I'm upset. Mm-hmm. And he says, all right, well, don't try to not be upset. And which is like really enlightened. He's awesome, you know? And then he goes, why don't you just lay here and do Savasana and like find out where that's at in you, you know? And then I got this, oh, this is what I drank away. Like, it's so much easier to pick up a glass of wine than it is to go, oh, this is my six-year-old saying, I'm all alone. No one's got my back. No one's in my corner.
That's right.
Oh, that's in my body. Oh.
Well, so then.
Thank you.
Well, what did you do then? You discovered it was a six-year-old you in your body feeling that way.
Yeah, I felt it. I just was with it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. Then I fell asleep with my Anurag.
So yeah. You and he no longer had a conflict, you're saying?
Oh yeah, no, it was totally perfect for me to find that in myself, you know. And then actually the next day I meet the guy who hosts I'm at a retreat out in Riverside, and I met the guy who runs it's like the New Agey conference in Los Angeles that he wanted to book me and my spiritual comedians in. I say in quotes, cause what a bad name, right? But the very next day, it's like, oh, something shifted, I think, for that to open up for me. You know, I don't get to muscle my way through this reality. It's so hard.
Yeah, that. Yeah. That I'm on board with. So what I heard you say was by getting in touch with the feelings that were under the reactivity that came from the six-year-old you, that eased the tension of the reactivity, and then you no longer had a conflict. Is that correct?
I'm sure there's pieces of it maybe still there. What I've noticed with doing work with ayahuasca is that you can work on something, and but it's like it took years to develop it.
Yeah.
It's just a muscle to develop, you know, to be other than that reactive little kid who's afraid no one's got their back, you know, like, I don't know, you have a discipline. One of the reasons I wanted to be on your podcast is because, wow, she's really been putting her focus on mastering something. I'm so glad you charge what you charge for your retreats. I'm like, that's balls to the wall. That's awesome, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's whatever you put your attention on, isn't it? I mean, like, I'm devoted to personal growth because I'm devoted to freedom. I just always was. Mm-hmm. It was in my nature as a kid. First time I saw Richard Pryor, I was like, the Messiah. Richard Pryor doing stand-up that was such a departure from the square old dudes, you know, Catskill dudes. I'm like, I want to do that. I want to do that. I want to free people up by being free and telling the truth. Wouldn't that be awesome? You know, so it's been a long journey and I'm not even anywhere near done yet. I still have beefs, you know, and it's still hard to be with my mother for longer than a dinner. It's like we came in together to irritate each other or something.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, Vanda.
If you know you're enlightened, here's my quote that I want to leave your audience with before we do this other thing. If you think you're enlightened, try visiting your family for a week.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like nothing, no better gauge.
Yeah, that's why I think Al-Anon is sort of like the whole thing. Like, yeah. If you get real deep into the 12 steps in Al-Anon, that shit is the ninja shit. And every guru, teacher, landmark coachy, whoever that I've ever worked with, it all comes back to fucking free Al-Anon principles. They're free. Mm. You can just go there for free and see the face of God and be empowered. But nobody...
It's your blind spots, right? The blind spots that live behind you that you don't know you have. Like, that's valuable work.
Well, yeah. I want to spend thousands at Landmark first. Yeah,
exactly. Well, people believe, you know, they're like, I only get value when I commit through money. I can't right. just get it for, I can't just choose joy for joy. I have to be suffering. I can't just learn it at Al-Anon. It has to be harder. Let me go to this retreat, whatever.
I have to give up yeah. something. Yeah.
You know what a friend said to me once that I thought was so brilliant when I was going to go see Harv Eker, who was this corny, like self-help promoter who made you high five and go, you got a millionaire mind. And my brother and I were like, oh
God,
I can't believe it. But I asked my friend, I go, is this guy worth it? Is he? I've heard a lot of good things, but it goes against me. And she said, there's gold in all of it. There's gold in all of it. And I'm like, oh, that's so brilliant. Yeah.
What is your full legal name?
Vanda Mary Magdalene Mikulowski.
Well, if that's not prophetic. All right. So, Vanda, we're going to
open. Magdalene is the confirmation name, by the way.
Is it on your driver's license?
No, Vanda Mary Mikulowski.
Okay. That's what we'll use. Yeah. Okay, great. So, basically, we'll just kind of do a little easy peasy lemon squeezy meditation just to get into the breath and the body a little further. And then I'll say these words, the prayer of the Akashic Records, which will open me into your soul and its alignment with Source. You might feel more peaceful, more at ease. You might feel things release. You might not. And then I'll probably, it's goofy, but I may have my eyes closed for a lot of it because it helps me stay in touch with that level of consciousness. And then I'll let you know, okay, the records are open now. And then you can just ask away. I am fully groovy, truly, with whatever you want to talk about. We've had some really fun episodes where we've gotten into crimes and murders and death and ghosts and angels and aliens and clearing and healing and testicles. Like, there's nothing off limits. So whatever comes up that feels like you'd like to explore, let's go ahead and do that. Mm-hmm. Cassidy, do you mind letting me know, or maybe Desmond, when we're at like 7 minutes to our time, because I might
I'll
have
let you
my
know.
Eyes closed and not be aware. So
you mean at like 12:52?
Mm-hmm. So we can start to wrap up. Okay. All right. So we'll just take a couple deep breaths into the low belly. Consciously breathing into the low pelvic floor. And we'll just set our intention to be willing to feel whatever comes up. And we'll set our intention to be willing to know whatever we know. And we'll set our intention to be willing to say whatever is true. and to discover what is meant to be discovered and to discover what would bring value to the individuals present. And we're going to feel the bottoms of our feet on the ground or through the sock or the shoe. Imagine the bottoms of the feet in relationship to the floor below them. As we continue to breathe into the low belly, feeling what we feel here in this moment. We're going to allow our bodies to fully relax into the chair, allowing the chair we're sitting in to do the work of holding the body, giving up the need to hold the body up or keep it together. Releasing the weight as we exhale from the low belly. Releasing the weight of our blood and our muscles and our bones into the weight of the chair. Okay. Let's do a quick little visualization. We're going to visualize, imagine, allow the idea that there are little spheres of light or chakras or energy fields at the bottom center of each foot. And we're going to see those little chakras expand and open until the bottom of each foot is a nice open plane, just through our intentionality, our vision, our imagining. And as that plane of energy at the bottom of each foot opens, we're going to visualize, see, imagine, allow there to be a complex structure of roots that grows down energetically from your energy field out of the left foot down into the earth. 500 roots grow out of the left foot down into the earth, rooting you here and now. 500 energetic roots from your essence, from your spirit, grow out of the bottom of the right foot into the center of the earth, miles and miles down. So we have, I don't know, 1,000-ish roots growing from the bottom of both feet collectively. Excellent. That's just our little energy fields touching base with the earth in a more intimate way. Next step, we'll just see, imagine, visualize, allow there to be a grounding cord from the root chakra or the base of the spine shooting to the center of the earth. It's about 1.5 feet wide. We're going to allow, imagine, visualize the energy or the consciousness or the love of the planet to shoot up through that grounding cord, the earth's soul contributing to you into your root, Allah, and then splitting off into each hip, Allah, flowing, constant flow of spiritual energy up from the essence of the earth through that grounding cord into your root, splitting off into each hip, filling each quad, Allah, each knee, each hamstring, each shin and calf, each ankle and foot, and spilling down totally fluidly and easily into each root, 500 out of the left foot, 500 out of the right, being nourished now by the spiritual energy of the earth, meaning the essence of the earth. Excellent job. All right, is it required that we do that next piece? Is it in her highest good? Shall we just carry forth? Okay, so with that tripod grounding structure in place, I mean, we're gonna, I'll go ahead and open your records now, Vanda, with the Akashic Records prayer. You can just breathe, stay connected to your low belly. By the power of divine light within us all, come Holy Spirit, Spirit of light, Spirit of truth. Amen. For the highest good of all throughout time, fill our hearts with divine love as I humbly ask permission to open the divine portal to the highest realm of the Akashic Records for Vanda Mary Michalowski. Akashic beings of light, guide Vanda Mary Michalowski to the deepest truth of her being, releasing any blocks and restrictions to her abundance and highest good. Lords of the Akashic Records, assist Vanda Mary Michalowski to fully embody her soul's light, fulfill her soul's purposes, and heal any accumulated karma. Surround Vanda Mary Michalowski with the enlightenment and wisdom of her masters, teachers, and loved ones. Clearly direct Vanda Mary Michalowski's perspective and actions to those that manifest her divine plan. I'm going to go quiet for just about 20 seconds. Just breathing, relaxing, releasing. Okay, free of all resistance, judgment, and fear. Free of all resistance, judgment, and fear. Free of all resistance, judgment, and fear. We're now filled with divine love, and the records for Vanda Mary Michalowski are open. And I'm just going to ask right now. So Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the Records of Vanda Mary Michaloski, I'm asking that you deepen me into Vanda's records now that we can hear clearly for her highest guidance, highest wisdom on her behalf. Show me what it feels like to be a clear channel of the Akashic Records for Vanda Mary Michaloski. I'm in. Just one moment. Okay. Okay. So the records are open. I am going to keep my eyes closed for a bit, Vanda. So, you know, if you could get anything out of this time, what would that be? And or what would you like to know from the Akashic Records, meaning the highest vibrational frequency of light that we can all now experience?
Can I talk?
Yep.
I had my own ideas, but what just came up is how can I be a better listener to Source, and how can I be used?
When you say better listener to Source, what does that mean?
Means a better listener to people and to like sometimes I go unconscious. Like there seems like there's no magic in life, and I am and I'm muscling mass to mass, and I want to live in the realm of spirit more and listen for the beauty and the magic of the big picture here.
Okay. So the second question, which was, how can I be used? They're like, yes on that question. There's a big yes on the question itself. Like that is the question at hand. They're like, excellent question. So we're going to let this information trickle in. First piece is making more subtle and refined the energy field. Allows for a more subtle and refined hearing, listening, receiving. Remembering, Vanda, that the entirety of your body is a psychic antenna. Your body is the key. Your body is a psychic antenna. You are a receiving receptacle. You are a lightning rod, you in particular, at the top of the mountain of life. So anything and everything you do to close your body, and they're working on your third chakra right now. Oof. Anything and everything done to close the body will put the barriers up in front of the receiving channels. So you can think of the chakra system or the energy fields in the body as receiving channels. The idea is to have the barriers down at all times. Like a piece of meat becomes tenderized and soft, you yourself are becoming tenderized and soft. You understand this already. And so we ask you, what is your practice on the daily of softening the density of your three-dimensional experience into the expansive realm of consciousness? What do you do?
Well, you know, because I've dealt with depression ever since I was a kid, either I'm on track with the yoga and the meditation or I'm off it. And it's like black or white, you know? And when I eat well and I eat like it's fuel for the body and not for distraction, then, you know, it definitely, you know, this COVID thing has had me in the house a lot more than ever. And that's the worst place for me to be. And so I'm kind of fighting against my own tendency toward depression. To be able to say, I feel like going for a walk and go, I haven't had that in months, you know, I want to love life and I want to love going for walks and things like that. And
okay.
And because I'm dealing with the mentality of mental health that's so sketchy sometimes, yeah. I need to, I'm sorry, you have something.
It's all right. Yeah. We understand. So here's the short answer, if you will, that leads to the long-term practice, which is you must, in order to become the level of subtle receiver you're asking to become, you must take every single piece of resistance, including depression. You must take every piece of resistance to the oneness, to the vast field of oneness, to the vast field of oneness, which is to say, the light will transmute and transform even the depression, even the not wanting to get up and do it, even the. So this looks like in your three-dimensional reality, sitting on the pillow, if that's what you do, and chanting the word gorilla, if that's what you do, and whatever you do that subtilizes, that makes soft, supple, subtle, and expansive energies that are contracted and constricted, that is what you must do with actively, intentionally, each piece of resistance. Now, the key for you, the next step for you, Vanda, your energy field, by the way, is like, I need words, show me words. It's like bright, vast, expansive space. It's very Sagittarian. It's very like expansion and light and space in an intense, bright way. This is not the energy of every human we interact with. The place where you have sticking points is you have such a strong, beautiful, gifted mind. And the challenge of the strong, beautiful, gifted mind is you will think that the answers to the mind's questions are in the mind. They're not. So there's no coaching required at this point for you. What there is a taking of every energetic block. Think of your depression as a thick, sticky, more like for you, like a gray cloud that runs through the blood vessels. Your task is to sit with the gray cloud that runs through the blood vessels on your chair, on your cushion, wherever you sit, and say the name of God into that gray cloud, or chant Om, or say whatever your thing is. You must say the thing, do the thing, breathe the light of consciousness, of God, of oneness, of love into the thick gray cloud that runs through your blood vessels in your mind. Then when that is clear, because it will, if you do this, you go to the next thing that is thick and heavy, and the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. This is the way of the walking, as we say. And so you could ask the question, yes, as you were before, so wisely, each of you, couldn't I just choose joy for joy's sake? Not at this moment in your case. Why? Because there are real three-dimensional realities occurring for you that need to be tended to. You're not going to have a spontaneous awakening through consciousness and coaching to the oneness and the joy again. You'll have them, but they will be short-lived. Have you noticed they're always somewhat on a time clock, and you always have to go back to remembering them? The more you do it in the body, through bringing the light of source or oneness or equanimity right to the body where the places of trauma live as thick, heavy energies, the more your body is liberated forever from them. And that's how you stop the cycle of reincarnation, if you want to know. You become so spacious that you don't have to return for more refinement. And so it is. So Katie now, we had a period of time in Los Angeles, actually, where Katie was working through the last layers of her depression, her clinical depression. Now, let's be clear. Human beings can experience depressive symptoms all the time. And much of the world's population is in this moment because of circumstantial difficulties on the planet presently. Normal, understandable, also work withable through the light. That being said, there's this other thing called clinical depression, or you could say a chemical imbalance in the chemistry and the wiring of the neurological, the neurobioelectrical, socio-emotional system, psyche of the body being soul organism, called clinical depression in your reality. That is a different thing. Please, that is a different thing. They are two different things. There are many distinctions therein and many gray areas. And so Katie sat in the cottage house behind the house of a friend of hers, saying the name Allah into the thick, heavy wiring of depression in her brain. And there was a day when there was no more, period. The challenge of the intelligent person in the three-dimensional reality is you will always try to fix a broken mind with a broken mind. And this is a broken formula. Period. And so it is that we sit, Vanda, like that. We sit in so much joy and light and pleasure and bright, shiny. It's like skipping through a field the way a child would is the essence of your energy field, if you're asking. And so we sit here like, this is you, this big, loud, bright thing we're doing right now. This is you, this energy we're being. The depression is not you. And the depression requires that you be with it in order to dissipate it, transmute it, pull it out. Okay. And so we want to know, do you have clarity for yourself as a human on the three-dimensional realm of how you practice? Or would you like some further clarification? You particularly, not just one, you. How is your practice? Is it clear to you what it is?
My practice, you mean yoga and meditation and like that? Because it's not real clear. I mean, I do meditate, but not always consistently.
Okay.
And
what kind of meditation are you practicing now when you do?
Well, I do every Wednesday night with my Buddhist meditation recovery gang online. And then I just came up with my own sort of TM 20 minutes where I just keep saying a mantra and bringing myself as deeply into the subconscious as I can and just keep being open.
Okay. And so you're working with a mantra. Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, is this a TM mantra?
You know, I never did the course, so I just figured it's all made up. I'll give myself one. So I just took Sat Nam. I'm sorry, I'm probably not supposed to say it. I just took Sat Nam because it rolls off my tongue easily. It feels natural.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it means. I looked it up once, but I forgot. But Sat Nam is like throwing the anchor out of the boat on the frenetic waters and going down deeper.
Yeah.
For me.
I mean, okay. So Sat Nam, something like I am Sat Nam, I am. And what Sat Nam resonates at the frequency of the consciousness of knowing that you are the one, right? You are the oneness. I am. It's almost like the similar energy of the title of the book, I Am That. Sat Nam. But Sat Nam Sat Nam has the frequency of the Kundalini masters, okay? Yogi Bhajan. So here's what you have to understand. Okay. I just really hear this. Sat Nam for Vanda Mikulaski. Is that in her highest good? Can she use that to transmute these energies? Yes. Is there a better way for her? Faster, cleaner, easier? No. Okay, great. Sat Nam works. Now, okay. You know how, you in particular are aware that anything you do will work, right? There is no right path. And the paths all kind of work. You're aware of this. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. Sat Nam comes from a particular lineage, which is the Kundalini yogic traditions. It would behoove you. There is a saying you may have heard. When you know one thing well, you know all things. When you know one thing well, you know all things. So similarly, Katie Rubin walked the Sufi path for 6-8 years quite actively, quite deeply, because it was the doorway through which she could travel everywhere else. But she had to focus on that for 6-8 years in order to for the completion within that system to lead to the doorway to other things. So some folks who are intelligent come to awaken to the notion that like systems are problematic, and they are because of the humans and what the humans do with the systems. However, the lineage of teachings is not the problem. In other words, it's not the yogic traditions are not the problem. It's what people do with the traditions. So if you're chanting Satnam, our point is, please pay attention to the other traditions in that particular lineage and do them. In other words, you must create a strong, bright container of support for your energy field, Vanda. Your energy field, if you just say Satnam and know nothing else about anything else about that system, there are missing pieces. So Satnam is excellent for you because it's in alignment with the Kundalini breath work, which would really, really work wonders for you in particular, the Kundalini breath work. It is so purifying and so brightening of the essence of the individual and so softening of the hard edges, but without dimming the light. This is the gift of the Kundalini work. So by diving deeply into one thing, you will gain energetic access into hearing everything, knowing everything, seeing everything, going everywhere. Now, are we saying like Kundalini yoga is the answer? No. And it seems to work for you for now as a way forward to soften the edges so you can hear better, which is the thing you asked for. It will feel, Vanda, like you are doing some weird religious culty something. This is where the discipline of bowing your mind and your heart to the supremacy of the light is the whole thing. You are an expert in intentionality. Many people do not understand what intentionality creates. You have to understand when you're inside of a system and people get oogie and weird about the system, you don't have to be them and do what they do. You can be a bowed servant to the light and to the oneness for the sake of getting what you want. Because by the way, that desire that you have to be a better listener, a better receiver, a better antenna that can follow and be used, that is a divine desire. When you are in the system and the people are going, oh, Guru Gamukhi Lulu Hoo Hoo is my favorite. You don't have to fucking buy into that. You just follow the light because you know better. But it doesn't mean leave the system entirely just because people are being irritating. Because guess what? Wherever you go, people will be irritating everywhere. So, sensitize your system, your third dimensional body, being, soul, spirit, please, with more higher bright vibrational light. Satnam works very nicely for you. The breath work would contribute. At least research and understand the lineage a bit better and carry forth committedly daily for the benefits. Here's another last little nugget. We're talking a lot. Is an awareness of, if you see, Vanda, there's nothing wrong with the fact that you're someone who likes, like, you want like a strong hit of light. You want like God to smack you in the fucking face and be like, pa-pow. And that's part of who you are. This way we're talking, you see how it's bright and it's loud. This is you. This is you. And so you need a fucking fire hose of light through the asshole to shoot up through your energy field and right out your fucking eyes. That's how you are. And the Kundalini breath work is very fast acting and very potent. Do you have experience with it at all?
Yeah, I've always been attracted to it. I even taught some of the exercises I learned when teaching yoga, and I've always loved it. They're right. I was, I just think people who wear shit on their heads are weird.
Correct.
It makes me laugh. Like it makes a child laugh. Like, oh, stop being so important with the thing on your head.
Yes.
Like I hate it. It's like, yes. Anything on your head is stupid.
Hallelujah. And so it is. And so that's where you become, Vanda, ultimately, yeah, the leader. You will become the leader to some, not to all, but to the ones who understand that piece. You have within you the energy of the, what are they called? The energy of the trickster, laughy, jokey, playful spirits, you know, the trickster archetype. Okay. And this is a big part of you. And so within a Kundalini structure, for example, if you're the one who wears no fucking hat, the people who don't want to wear the fucking hat will come to your class and you'll change everybody's life. But instead your MO has been like, nah, I'm out.
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, stick it out. Because the light has the gift of the answers of all the things you're looking for. It's just, you need to stay in and fucking, you get it. You get it. It's not the people and the outfits they wear. Now, Here's one more tiny piece about that piece. The outfits they wear and the things they do and how they get religious about the significance of the serious of the external. There is a wisdom teaching on that concept, which is the following. The Sufis have said, and probably many others. Definitely many others have said. Many have said the mystical path, or you could say the direct knowing of the light of God through the individual human, that is mysticism. The mystical path within any religious path, because initially all mystical paths were encased, if you will, within a religious structure. The mystical path is the sap of the tree. You are the tree. The religion, initially, back when it was developed and given and delivered from the light beings it came from, by the way, the religion was meant to be the bark of the tree. In other words, the religion was meant to be behaviors that the human body, human self, could do to protect the light of the sap of the tree. So, for example, if you eat the things that are healthy for the body and you don't go to places at 3 o'clock on Thursday because there's war there, or don't eat the meat because pork chop will kill you, as Chris Rock says, or don't, you know, the rules were meant to protect the light within you. Don't have sex with everyone you meet because then you dissipate the energy within your heart, not because it's wrong and you're bad, but because it doesn't serve the thing you're trying to become. You say you want to be a receiver. Well, you have to keep your field pretty clean in order to become a receiver. So the rules were meant to protect the sap of the tree so that the sap, or you could say the light of the divine, was easily feelable or receivable by the human being. Now, you're smart. You can create your own religious structures outside of your internal practices. For example, if you follow the Kundalini work and do some breath work there and, you know, have some great experiences through that path for a committed amount of time, you'll start to experience a lot of expansion and brightness. And your third eye, by the way, is going to blow the fuck open, and your crown is going to blow fucking off, and you're going to see and know shit and need a lot of time alone, but also enjoy certain people. And you'll know just who to go to and when, and the ocean is going to call to you when it calls to you. Like, I can see the whole thing. It's a lovely existence. And you're going to notice, like, you know what? I can't be around this person if I want this light to feel this strong and if I want this receiving antenna to function. And I can't go to that restaurant and I can't drink that thing. And I can't, there's certain things I'm going to make my little external religious practice. So just in the name of protecting the sensitivity of the receiver, in the same way that Katie here, I keep hitting the microphone and then it makes a loud noise on the other end. The religious practice would be don't hit the microphone because then the sound can work better. Not because you're wrong and bad if you hit the microphone, but because the sound works better. Okay, how is this landing? Questions, thoughts, curiosities? Where are you at with all this right now?
Oh, it's so rich and there's so much there and I get it. And the last place, the body, it's like the first place I want to go away from. I had training for many years as an addict and an alcoholic, you know, just avoiding this physical experience. And but now I'm clean and sober and I am yearning to get on a different game board, you know, and to be used well for the last, what, few decades I have here on the planet, and hopefully more, but we'll see. Maybe not hopefully more. I don't know. So, but I wonder, I'm writing a book. I'm like 90% done. Is there anything, it's called Tap Dancing for Daddy, and it's about the first 19 years of my life. And I'm working so hard on it, and I love it. And my writers groups are fruitful. And I'm just wondering, is there something I'm missing that could be a contribution in there and be?
Yeah. And it's what we've already discussed. And the thing we were just going to offer, which is so beautiful how you said, the question you asked was in response to what we were just going to say, which was, you know, as you do this energy work, this breath work, this purification of your sap of the tree of you, the writing is going to come so easily. This is just the beginning with this book. You have words in you, words and words and words and words, and people will come and ask you to say more words and ask you to do the things. Here's the thing. It will come to you through the creation of the, here's how they say it, the bright white river of light through the midline of your body. The things you've desired your whole life will come to you magnetically, just whooshed, attracted to the refrigerator of you as you develop the bright white river of light through the midline of your body, through disciplined action daily. It will, Vanda, it will, finally it will. It's just that it is backwards to how you think it will occur. It will not come through the doing. Listen, some people are here to be doers. Some people are meant to like figure it out in your head and then go out there and make it happen. That is about 2-4% of your human population. The rest of the human population is meant to align, listen, attune, wait, respond, receive. But how do you receive effectively? You have to, you know, turn the knob of the, you know, when you listen to a radio station, you have to get it right on the right little line back when we had radio stations. You can't just like, I don't know, kind of over here. And then be like, why am I not hearing 97.3? Well, because you're at 96.9. So you've got to attune the river of light to match the frequency of the source of light.
Got it. So got it.
Okay.
Yep.
This is the time, beloveds, all of you. This is the time. This is such an opportunity. There is a doorway open for all of humanity to understand that the mind is meant to be in service to the spirit, period. The mind is not meant to enslave you. The mind is meant to be a happy, useful servant to the light, period. And the only way to do that is you have to literally rewire your nervous system through practice. So you could ask, why? Why is it set up that way? Why can't we just come in and be, you know, receptacles of light and already be oriented correctly? What's with all the frickin' work? And I'm listening. And they show me the image of a candle flame at the base of your pelvic floor. This is the light of the divine feminine. You remember the movie The Da Vinci Code?
I read the book.
Okay, in the book, you know, the epic quest, and they run and they do the things and they fight the dragons and they kill the people and they find out the secret and they go under the thing and they go into the, what's it called, the catacombs. And what's the secret? A red rose. And what does it mean? The divine feminine. And they buried it and they had it all the time, but they buried it because it was too threatening to the patriarchal structures that blah, blah, blah. That's all actually true. Now, there's another thing that intelligent people on Earth do is they go like, well, I don't want to polarize and be like, femininity is good, masculinity is bad. We're not suggesting that. We're suggesting that the powers that be on the human levels desire to squash that little candle flame in the base of your pelvic floor. Because if the world lived by the light of a little candle flame, guess what they wouldn't need? They wouldn't need to buy a lot of stuff. That's just true. We're not saying stop having capitalism. We're saying the priorities are out of whack at the moment. In terms of humans having peace and ease, fluidity, and becoming the receivers they desire to be. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay, other questions? Anything at all?
Anything from my brother who died when I was 12 or my dad who died when I was 17? Anything from those guys?
Could I have their full legal names?
Brian Vincent Mikulowski and Vincent Stanley Mikulowski was my dad.
So many Vincents. Stanley. So Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the Records for Vanda Mary Mikulowski. We're asking if there's any information or words or energies from Brian Vincent Mikulowski for Vanda. Yes. How old was he when he died?
15.
Well, do you mind asking him any questions? Could you ask directly and then we can respond?
You know, I just love him. I love you. And you're the only guy, I feel like I was the only one who knew you. And I just want to know if you're okay. And I want to know if I'll see you again. And yeah, I just want to know if you're back or anything like that.
You mean in human form?
Yeah.
Okay. I get a no on that. So the first piece, when he first came in, this is what he goes, "Hey, babe." And I'm like, well, that's okay. So he's like, first of all, he like shoots into my body, like pow, like a bright, bright light. "Hey, babe," like that. So are you okay? Definitely, definitely okay. Super okay. How could I not be okay? I don't have to be in a body. It's all good. You're the one struggling. Will she see him again? Yes. In death? Yes. In a body again? Maybe not. No. That's a big fat no. And so he's like, so what do you miss, man? Like, what do you think you're going to get out of being with me?
Well, you were the Clyde to my Bonnie. You taught me to rebel, you know, and I loved holding the banner of fuck them with you.
And notice who's dead. Girl, you couldn't have kept going that way. We can't keep going that way. Look, I was not long for this world. Because of that, we had a good time and then we had to grow up. And this was my path. And me leaving is what is a part of catalyzing you onto your spiritual journey. It's all written ahead of time. It's all decided. It's all part of consciousness evolving as itself. If I had stuck around, we'd have had some serious fucking problems.
Yeah.
Including heroin in particular, he's mentioning. Real problems. But it was never to be. And you and I had an agreement when we came in that this would go down this way. Also, part of my existence was to show you that there are some good dudes. There are some good dudes. So what else would you like to know? He's real like, what? Come on. He's kind of like, what?
Were you killed? Did one of the kids hit you with a log and knock you out? Or did you just drown?
Okay, that reads more, the drowning. Yes. Yeah, I get a strong no on were you killed? Yeah, strong, strong no. Was he killed? Were you killed, Brian? Brian? No. Did you just drown? It's sort of like, it's not quite as simple as did you just drown, but they did not hit him with a log. Are there other theories, Vanda?
Yeah, they were huffing aerosol spray.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew, that's it. Whew. Mm. So it's like got a little too high, had an accident. Whoops. That's what he says.
You're funny.
Yeah. And I do get that. Also, I think he hit his head on something, but it wasn't intentional by other people.
Got it.
Very clear on that. Whew. There were some kids really like, you know, you could say suffering or not on a great path that were with him.
Yeah.
Yep. The image I see is he huffs some stuff. He trips him. He's laughing. He's all unconscious, laughing like, whoops, slips, hits his head on some wood. Yes, some wood, falls down into the river. Everybody else is, let's see, are they willfully ignorant? No. Are they just too high to do anything about it? Yes. And it snaps a couple of them into sober as day. But at that point, there's nothing to be done.
Mm.
Did some others of them die or just him?
Just him at this point. There were 7 of them there that day, including Brian. And so the 6 of them, but they were high and playing music and all over the beach area. So everyone said, hey, where's Brian at some point? And it was like, oh, I don't know. There's his boombox. Maybe he left.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. Mm. Mm. But it's sure nice to feel his energy. I love him so much. And
he's fun. He's a sassy motherfucker.
Yeah, I had pretty oppressive mom and dad, 1950s energy that we were like, hell with that shit, you know?
Yeah.
Which made me become like fascinated by Richard Pryor and George Carlin later.
Yep.
And not Little Houses on the Hillside, Native Ticky-Tacky for us.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to wrap up here in just 2 minutes, but let's see. He seems to have one more bit here. Yeah. So he's saying, Vanda, so it's like, listen, babe. He keeps calling you that. I feel silly saying it. He's like, babe. You know, the romantic notion, the romantic ideal of what we were together was not, it was an addict's dream. It was it was an illusion. There were pieces of it that were true. The soul is free. The spirit is free. Those rules were going to be way too confining for you always. And fuck you to everything associated with it is also a defensive strategy. So there's all of it was me having defensive strategizing against them or in response and reaction to them. And you feeling more free with me than you did with them. But Vanda, there's a much brighter, bigger freedom than what I had for you. And that's what you'll find in your practice. And, oh, this is neat. As you do that work, it will brighten and lighten my spirit. And you will find, oh, wow, you will find me up in the realms of the bright river of white light. We would like you, the record keepers say, to listen, if you can, Vanda, to some other episodes of this podcast to understand how differently we speak to different people. So you can see clearly how this is so for you. Okay? If you're up for it. Wow. I say thank you to Brian. He's like ready to elevate at this high frequency level. He's kind of doing some work on the other side with his own on his own journey here. And as you, Vanda, up frequency, brighten up, it's like I watch him like whoosh, merge up into the light with you. Wow, it's really beautiful. Well, I wish we had a little more time, but for today, we'll pause it here and perhaps there's more to be done in the future.
Thank you so much. Oh my God. I haven't cried in a long time. That's sweet.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. So we want to say, let me close these up for us all real quick. So thank you, Brian Vincent Michalowski, so much for visiting so quickly, so easily, just by us saying your name, really. I'm asking to return him to his complete wholeness as a spirit. He can leave my system now. I mean, Thank you to the Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the Akashic Records for Vanda, Mary Michalowski, so much for these insights and this guidance and this direction and these teachings now. Amen. I'm asking that you return us all here today to our complete human wholeness. Returning Vanda's energy to herself, Cassidy's, Desmond's, and mine, all and anyone else listening, all of our energies back fully to our complete human wholeness. The divine portal and the Akashic Records for Vanda Mary Michalowski are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic Records for Vanda Mary Michalowski are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic Records for Vanda Mary Michalowski are now closed. Amen, 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 amen. Amen. And so it is. My God, Vanda, thank you for that. And thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. It's like church. I'm all of a sudden in a totally different space. I'm like, so thank you so much.
My sincere pleasure. Amen. Thank you, God. Thank you to all the people and the energies that contributed. Take good care. Let's be in touch. It's so nice to read.
Your little guy back there saying, it's time, Lou. I need to pitch it.
Yeah.
Hi, boo.
She's like, I really need to pee, you guys. It's pee time.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my God. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vanda. My pleasure. I'm so happy and honored you were here. Thank you.
It was a blast chatting with you and getting a little taste of the Vanda salad. I don't know what that means, but
I'm gonna go listen to some of your episodes. I heard the one with you and that beautiful woman, and what a cool thing that one was.
Our story. If you want to listen to a different voice, how you're getting talked to, just listen to last week's episode to hear that sense of like, oh, we're gonna talk to you differently. This is a different
also the one with your friend Cassidy, like way at the beginning, the reed, she was like a reed of grass, thin reed, her energy, remember? And you're like, that's exactly what that person's energy is.
They were the person who was calling from New York. Why can't I think of their name? Rami's friend.
Yeah, way back at the beginning, like episode two or three or four. Anyway, you get the idea.
Just listen to
them. They're a metaphor machine. I just love the metaphors that kept coming out that are so novel. Yeah.
Thanks. You know? Yeah, that happens. That is what this little system likes to do that for sure.
Yeah.
All right, love. Thank you so much.
Mwah. Okay, thanks.
Have a good one. Bye. And then we'll just, there you are. I just wanted to wrap up with you. Thank you for keeping the time. And I'm sorry, Cass, we didn't get to talk much on this one. We were kind of.
That is okay. It was all happening.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, though? We can say our sign off because it's what you told Vanda. It was the message Vanda was given. Do the work.
Do the work.
Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers. What are the answers?
I thought I said leave.
That was a Sounds Awesome production.